This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In an attempt to explain how the Bush administration is dealing with the rest of the world, my guest James Mann has written a new book about the president's foreign policy team. The book traces the history of six of its leading members: Vice President Cheney, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of State Colin Powell, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz, and Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage. They all worked on foreign policy in previous Republican administrations and, according to Mann, represent the generation that bridged the Cold War and post-Cold War. During the presidential campaign of 2000, Bush's foreign policy advisors called their team the Vulcans after the Roman god of fire, the forge, and metalwork. James Mann's new book is called Rise of the Vulcans: The History of Bush's War Cabinet. Mann is a former correspondent for the L.A. Times and is now senior writer-in-residence at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. What holds the people in this book together?
Well, the simplest answer, of course, is that they all sit around the table in the Bush administration's foreign policy deliberations. They're the six, other than the president, the six most senior people on the Bush foreign policy team. Beyond that, however, I argue in the book that there are a series of underlying attitudes and assumptions and values. One, of course, is a belief in the overwhelming importance of military power for the United States, a certain reluctance to engage in accommodations with other countries, a very optimistic, expansive view of America's power and capabilities, and a belief in American values such as democracy and the idea that they should be, that other countries should take them on.
And these are views that you believe are behind the invasion of Iraq as well?
Well, I think they're part of the administration's mindset that led to the invasion of Iraq, yes.
Now, let's talk about some of the connections between the six people you write about in the book, especially the connections between Vice President Cheney and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. You say that they have an especially strong connection that dates back to the Nixon administration, when Dick Cheney was Donald Rumsfeld's administrative assistant. You describe them as a complementary pair. In what way?
Complementary in the sense that while they thought alike, their personalities were so different, and have been for 30 years. So Rumsfeld is very aggressively outgoing. Cheney is quiet and discreet. Rumsfeld is openly ambitious. Sort of never meets a next job he didn't want. Cheney is, at least on the surface, very low keyed and unambitious. And so their personalities sort of matched one another, while their interests in policy tended to be the same.
You say that Dick Cheney rose to the top by taking care of the mundane chores that people with larger egos avoid. What are some examples of that?
Well, I use the examples in the Ford administration, in the Ford White House. I was struck as I was researching this book and going through the Ford archives at some of the memos that Cheney wrote as deputy White House chief of staff. He was the assistant to Don Rumsfeld. And this is really Cheney's start in the White House. And what he was taking care of, there are memos about the White House plumbing. There are memos about the Christmas card lists. There are memos about, please get a headrest for Betty Ford on the helicopter. He really was taking care of all the little details that needed to be taken care of. Salt shakers, what was served at White House stag dinners. And he was so efficient and reliable that, of course, he kept on rising. I think we all know people in organizations who kind of get there a little earlier, are quiet, little heard from, leave later, and then get things done. And that was Cheney's attribute. Of course, from that, then once they see that he's efficient and discreet, he takes on substantive areas. And interestingly enough, in the Ford White House, intelligence was one of the first.
You say that Dick Cheney's Secret Service code name used to be Backseat. When did he get that?
He got that, again, during the Ford administration, when he was Again, Don Rumsfeld was the dominant personality in that Ford White House. He was the White House chief of staff. He was doing battle with other large figures like Henry Kissinger, and Cheney was his assistant. He was backseat.
And that's not his nickname anymore for the Secret Service, is it?
No.
I didn't think so. It's interesting how you chart the rise of the six people in the Bush War Cabinet who you profile in your new book. Some of them have changed a lot. Some of them you see consistent threads throughout their career. There's something about Donald Rumsfeld that seems to have changed a lot. During the Nixon years, Rumsfeld was the person who was considered anti-war and almost dangerously so. What was his position about the Vietnam War?
I was surprised. I was going through the Nixon White House recordings, which all who listen to are always riveted with how interesting they are. And it turned out that Don Rumsfeld, really within the Nixon White House, was kind of pushing for a quick American withdrawal from Vietnam. He was something of a dove, not outside, not in public, but he was the center of what I would call a cluster of domestic policy advisors who really thought that the war and the continuation of the war, which was then dragging on, fifth, sixth year, was diverting America's resources and energy away from domestic programs. And Rumsfeld was involved in domestic programs then. And he and some other domestic advisors, another was George Shultz, kept pushing within the Nixon White House to set a date or to somehow figure out how to get American troops out.
Another thing that's hard to imagine now is that Donald Rumsfeld was considered to be the Nixon administration's link to the young people on the college campuses.
Well, that was over 30 years ago. Rumsfeld was young. What was one of the younger and more dynamic members of the Nixon administration. Most of Nixon's other advisors were not political figures. They weren't people who could go out on their own around the country to sell the Nixon administration. Rumsfeld was. Rumsfeld was unique in the sense that he'd run for elective office. He'd been a member of Congress for about 6 years. And Nixon always saw him as the guy he wanted out selling the administration.
What are President George W. Bush's connections? What were his connections when he was choosing his cabinet to Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld?
Very interesting. Bush's father, George Bush Sr., Bush 41, as he's sometimes called, was something of a political rival of Rumsfeld. That dated back to the 1970s. Each, I think, saw himself as a possible moderate Republican candidate for president. And beyond that, the senior Bush thought that Rumsfeld had undercut him in an effort to become the vice presidential nominee in 1976. So there's a longtime rivalry between Rumsfeld and Bush Sr., although I was told in interviews for the book that it kind of passed by 2001. After the 2000 election, as George W. Bush, Bush 43, as he's known, began to put together his foreign policy team, the original idea, the original thinking was that Don Rumsfeld would be appointed director of the CIA. And other candidates were being considered for Secretary of Defense. Senator Coates at the time was the leading candidate. And then within the Bush team, the inner circle, two things happened. One, there was a concern about getting an extremely strong, knowledgeable Secretary of Defense, an experienced Secretary of Defense, to counterweight the influence of Colin Powell within the administration. Secondly, from a different direction, the current president's father, George Bush Sr., was concerned that there not be a change in the position of CIA director at the beginning of a new administration. He thought that would make it seem like it was a political appointment, and he didn't believe it should be.
What were the connections to President George W. Bush and now Vice President Dick Cheney before the presidential campaign? Were those connections largely through the president's father, George Bush Sr.?
Yes, they were. I'm sure that the current president saw Cheney as part of the older generation associated with his father and with his father's administration.
My guest is James Mann. His new book is called Rise of the Vulcans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is James Mann. He's the author of the new book, Rise of the Vulcans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet. One of the questions that a lot of people have been asking is, was regime change in Iraq on the Bush administration agenda before September 11th? Was September 11th a kind of convenient explanation or excuse to do something that the Bush administration war cabinet wanted to do anyways? From your investigation into the lives and the politics of the people in the war cabinet, what are your observations on that?
Yeah, good question. From what I've seen, one has to draw a distinction between regime change and serious military planning. Regime change in Iraq was the policy of this current administration from the time it took office, and also, however, of the Clinton administration in its last couple of years. They were formally for a policy of regime change starting in, I believe it was, 98. The Bush administration took office, certainly also believed in regime change, but there's a difference between a policy of regime change or a desire to change regimes and serious military planning for an invasion. And at least from what I've seen, the serious military planning was not at the beginning of this Bush administration. It really was. It was after September 11th. It's sort of the end of 2001, early 2002. And in that year leading up to the war. If you remember right, from about the time Bush took office until September 11th, there was some selective attention given to Iraq, but the dominant American Bush administration policy, which didn't work and which was controversial, had to do with sanctions, what were called smart sanctions. Again, the serious military planning is not at the early, in the early months of this administration.
After September 11th, Vice President Cheney went to an undisclosed location for his safety. And you say that this goes back to a strategy from the Reagan administration, a highly classified program. Describe what that program was.
It was run by a secret unit called the National Program Office. The Reagan administration was concerned about keeping the American government and obviously including the American military running during or after a nuclear war. And what they decided was this, that they would send out, if nuclear war was imminent, they would send out three teams, large teams, 60, 70 people around the country, different locations. Each team would be trained essentially to govern the United States after a nuclear war. And each team had kind of a chief of staff to run the team. One of the chiefs of staff was Dick Cheney, who was then in Congress. And a second team was headed by Don Rumsfeld, who was then a business executive in Chicago. But of course, both of these men had had experience, you know, real-life experience as White House chiefs of staff. This wasn't some paper exercise. I mean, you know, once or twice a year, these teams would be secretly sent out in the middle of the night from Andrews Air Force Base to some abandoned schoolyard. I think they spent 2 or 3 days eating MREs, meals ready to eat, the early versions. The Reagan administration, without telling the country, was really practicing for what might happen and how the country would be run in nuclear war. The program itself was phased out during the Clinton years. The Cold War ended. But some of the ideas, some of the approaches of that program carry over after September 11th. So Cheney goes off to undisclosed locations. Teams of federal officials are sent out immediately after September 11th to live and practice getting ready to run the country in other locations outside of Washington.
How did you learn about this secret plan?
In reporting this book for 2 years, I talked to as many people as I could. What do you know about these people? And in asking about Cheney and Rumsfeld, I first began to get hints from a couple of people. There's one person who said, well, I first got to know them in a classified program that I can't tell you about. And, you know, later on, a couple people who participated in the program provided a few more details, and I began to piece it together.
What's something that really surprised you that you learned during your research for your book about the Bush War Cabinet, something that we haven't touched on?
You know, one of the things that surprised me is to go through the 1990s and see how this team gradually developed its views. You know, the general perception, conventional wisdom, is the first Bush administration left office in 1992, and then 8 years later, the same group of people come together again. And, you know, they're supposed to start up where they left off, but they don't. If you go through that period from 1992 and 3 to 2000, what you find is that the center of gravity in the Republican Party shifts dramatically in a more conservative direction. That many of the positions that George W. Bush took in the 2000 campaign were not new to him. They were positions very similar to what Bob Dole laid out in 1996, support of missile defense, a tough line on North Korea and China, and so on. It was the party as a whole that shifted. Donald Rumsfeld had been out of public life, as far as people saw, from the 70s until 2001. What I found in going through the 1990s was that most, and the important word is most, of the members of the Vulcans had really been gradually working together, sharing ideas, talking about policy through the 1990s in a bunch of forums. That there were a bunch of different places where Condoleezza Rice, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, and Donald Rumsfeld were sitting down talking about ideas, talking about policy. The other part of that is Colin Powell was not at the table. That the Bush campaign of 2000 saw Colin Powell as important politically. He spoke at the convention in 2000. He was out there, but he wasn't part of these internal deliberations. There was one study group on missile defense. Most people were at it. Colin Powell wasn't. There was a congressional study group on foreign policy. Most of these other people were at it. Colin Powell wasn't. So you see that the divisions that we now see with this team in office were there in the 1990s. Just no one saw them.
You know, some people will read your book and think, uh-huh, I see a pattern here. These people were all, the people in the War Cabinet have been allied with each other for years. They had certain things on their agenda for years, like a military presence in the Gulf. Therefore, some people will say, it must be some kind of like heavy agenda that brings these people together again in the Bush administration, almost to the point of a conspiracy. You know, people will read that. Some people will read that into your book. What would you say to those who do?
No, I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think I'm interested in history. In history, a lot of things happen by chance. A lot of things just happen. I don't think this is, a group of people sitting down together and deciding on a conspiracy or a plot many years before. There are disagreements among these people. I've seen sometimes people talk about the neoconservatives plotting things that happened when this team took office. Of course, what that leaves out is that in the 2000 campaign, the neoconservatives didn't even support George Bush. They were supporting his Republican opponent, John McCain. This is a group of people who served together in several different administrations. They got to know one another. Because Republicans won 6 out of the previous 9 presidential elections, I think it is, they had worked together. Sometimes they were friends, sometimes they weren't. Cheney and Powell had a history going back to the first Bush administration that was, on the one hand, collegial, and on the other hand, under the surface, there was a good degree of tension. So, no, I don't see it as some unified conspiracy.
James Mann is the author of the new book, Rise of the Vulcans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.